You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. Also, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website needs. And now, The Porchcast.
Alright everyone, and welcome to the Porchcast. This is the 50th episode of the Porchcast, and we are broadcasting to you live from, not really live,
Las Vegas.
From Las Vegas, from the inside of a hotel lobby. We've got a jazz band that's going to be starting in just a moment, but we're going to get to as much as we can before they start blasting in here. We're broadcasting from Alamo Draft House, Sloan's Lake, episode 50, joined by Keenan Stoner from Two Parts, talking a little bit about the fifth annual collaboration fest. But as always, I'm joined by Hunter Grond and my co-host. What's going on, brother?
How did that sound? Like a jazz band?
Like a jazz band. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you're fitting right into the mold.
I should have told them when I snapped my fingers to give them my song.
Yeah.
My intro song.
A little drum intro. All right, well, Keenan, let's cut right to the chase. Collab Fest is back for its fifth edition, taking place this Saturday, so when this podcast posts tomorrow, at the Hyatt Regency in downtown Denver. Tell us a little bit about the festival and what exciting new additions you guys got going on this year.
Yeah, so when this posts, it'll be time to go ahead and grab your ticket, because you'll be mere hours from the fifth annual Collab Fest. We are throwing a big party in the Hyatt downtown. We're expecting over 100 beer projects from over 200 breweries. Some of the most unique beers you could find anywhere, all in one place, in a kind of cool new digs downtown, which will be really fun.
And I believe these breweries come from around 42 states, right? And across six countries. Is that correct?
Yeah, indeed. I think this was some of the most widespread brewery participation we've ever had. We usually have a few outliers, but this year was all over.
Now, I wanted to jump in here because this is one of my favorite festivals that takes place throughout the entire country, because it really does speak to the collaborative nature of the industry. How did this festival come about, and how has it grown throughout the past 5 years?
Yeah, so this one's really all just inspired by the fact that brewers and the whole beer industry is more willing to work together than almost any other industry in the world. So we kind of wanted to capture that fantastic kind of mentality of working together is better. You'll create even cooler things when you work together rather than just fight for the same business. Like, let's have these people drink all of our beers, not just my beers or just your beers. So we wanted to kind of capture that and create a festival around it.
Sure. And one of the cool things that comes out of it is that it gives brewers a chance to really experiment and do something different than the norm that they usually put in their tap rooms. So we're seeing a lot more creativity and innovation and willingness to try kind of new hops or try new ingredients in many cases. Tell us a little bit about some of the unique beers that are going to be poured at this weekend's festival.
Yeah, so we love this fest because when you bring brewers together, somebody might have one specialty in adjuncts. Somebody else's specialty might be whirlpool hopping or something. And so you get kind of some of the weirdest beers that you'll ever try. Mm-hmm. One that comes to mind that's especially kind of insane, and I'm intrigued to try, haven't had a chance to yet, is a beer that we had brewed that has Huita Lacoche in it. Pronunciation. Huita Lacoche, which is a corn fungus that grows on corn in kind of southwestern states. Apparently, it's like a bit of a delicacy for the locals there. Don't ask me why or how, but apparently it tastes good, and it is now in a beer, probably for the first time ever. So that'll be interesting. That was between Upslope and Santa Fe Brewing. And they're kind of making a riff on a common beer, so they're calling it a Southwest Common.
Yeah, and that we're broadcasting from a jazzed-up Alamo Draft House, which also we're actually broadcasting here because there is a tap takeover featuring six beers that are going to be poured at the Collaboration Fest. It's a Collab Fest preview tapping. When this podcast comes out, these beers should still be on tap, so come on by the Alamo Draft House, Sloan's Lake, to get a little preview tonight, and then you can come join for the full festival on Saturday. But that Upslope and Santa Fe Southwest Common is one of the beers that's available. It's brewed with Neo Mexicanas hops, New Mexico blue corn, and huitoloche, a unique Mexican corn fungus. Hunter, you're pumped about the festival. What are you excited to try?
Yeah, no, I already have my idea for next year's festival.
Oh, yeah?
What yeah. I'm just trying to look up the name. I can't remember the name, but it's like spit alcohol, like fermented drink.
Oh yeah,
I
want to
make like a spit.
I remember
beer
seeing
next
that.
Year.
Yeah, you chew on it. And
yeah,
spit
Steve
it.
Krowski and I are gonna sit around and like chew leaves and spit into a big vat and then ferment that next year as our collab beer. It'll be the Ratio Beerworks Brewers Guild, Colorado Brewers Guild collab
all
beer
chewed
for
by Steve.
2019. All chewed by Steve. That's the beer name actually.
Speaking of
all
Steve
chewed
Krowski.
By Steve.
Steve Krowski of the Brewers Guild happens to drop in local celebrity. Do you want to jump on the show real quick? Yeah, grab a beer and come join us.
It's a hot list.
Yeah, this collaboration fest is done in partnership with the Colorado Brewers Guild, so perfect timing for Steve to drop by, and he'll talk a little bit about his perspective as well. But Keenan, any favorites or anything that you're looking forward to really trying at the top of your list right now?
You know, I mean, one that I think a lot of people are really looking forward to try is, I think New Belgium did a blend with the Rare Barrel. That's just kind of a fun, big name celebrity brewer, you know, thing. But I think I'm excited to try that one, but I'm also excited to try anything and everything. There's a lot of kind of smaller breweries making stuff that is some of the most creative, delicious stuff that we've ever tried, that maybe they've ever made, and I think that's the most fun part about Collab Fest.
Yeah, a few things that really kind of stand out to me in terms of kind of more bizarre or unique, and then you mentioned the New Belgium and the Rare Barrel collaboration on the Shoulder of Giants. That was actually done in honor of Lauren Salazar, so her face is actually on the bottle.
Awesome.
So that's a really cool and definitely one that I want to try for sure. But New Image and Molly Spirits did a beer called I Can't Believe It's Actually Butter Stout. It's kind of making fun of the pastry stouts by actually using extract butter in the beer. It's a Samoa style stout, but they actually used.
Who was that? Molly's and who?
New Image.
New Image.
Yeah. They're kind of poking fun at the pastry stout phenomenon.
That's funny.
And then also one that I'm really kind of intrigued by, just because of my background, is Caution Brewing did a Peking Duck beer. I think it uses five spice as well. So. Really bizarre ingredients seem to be the theme. And of course you have...
What's your background, Tristan?
My background in duckology.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Duckology.
I'm a duck scientist. That's what I specialize day and night. And then also, you know, we talked a little bit on the website about this as well, but Wincoop Brewing actually did a beer with Climber's Chalk, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's called Limey Unicorn. They actually used... climbing chalk in the process, similar to the kind of sodium, I can't remember.
Like calcium or something? Calcifate?
That actually is used to kind of add a minerally background in English-style golden. So that's really cool as well. Now, Keenan, where can people find tickets? How much are tickets, and what time does the festival start? Give us the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, so collaborationfest.com will have the full list of breweries and beers that we are just barely sampling on this podcast. You'll be able to get the full rundown on every wild beer that's coming, as well as some fairly regular beers coming too, to kind of mix in. Tickets are $65 for general admission. We have a few of the connoisseur tickets left. Which is kind of a fancy way of saying you get in an hour early so that you get to try all the beers without as many lines. We have those available as well. Collaborationfest.com, Saturday at the Hyatt, 3 to 7 p.m. for connoisseurs, 4 to 7 for general admission.
Yeah, and then if you like partying even more, we've got the official after party taking place at Star Bar, featuring the Scott and Ratio collaboration beer, Magnetic North, a Norwegian white IPA, pouring on tap, and I'm hearing it's going to be a pizza party too.
Yeah, if you've never had Blue Pan Pizza Detroit style, it's, in my opinion, is the best pizza in Denver. Sammy's not here, or is she ever here to back me up on that as the pizza gypsy, but
you know, I'll go out on a limb. I will say I agree. Actually, I think it's the best pizza in Denver.
Absolutely,
it really is awesome pizza. But yeah, they're going to be showing their faces with a pile high bunch of zas. for recovery purposes.
I love Hunter taunting Sammy's inability to get the pizza, but also just throwing shade left and right.
Yeah, I don't care.
She's at the Juice Fest, so she can enjoy all the hay she
juice,
wants.
Juice Fest, Schmoose Fest.
Okay, we're going to jump into a few topics because there's been a lot happening in the beer industry since we last broadcasted. We talked about really crazy beers, but one of the bigger trends that's been happening has been the rise of the bargain craft beer, most recently seen in the release of Solid Gold premium lager from Founders pretty much that same week. Firestone Walker Lager was released, and they also had their previously released 805. Dayblazer from New Belgium, Old Aggie from New Belgium, Sam 76.
Who came out with a 30 rack recently? Somebody's coming out.
Yeah, High Hops, which is actually a Colorado brewery.
Colorado, yeah.
That came out with a 30 rack of beer. how do you guys feel about this kind of move, shift away from crazy, bizarre, innovative, weird ingredients to now drawing back to kind of more approachable, easy drinking lagers?
I don't know. I'm all about it. I love shit beer at times, and I'd love to support, local breweries as much as I can. So if somebody provides me access to easy drinking, cheaper, light beer, then yeah, I'll definitely go away from the High Lifes and the Court and the Banquets. I love it.
What's your go-to from in terms of a non-ratio dad beer?
Banquet. Yeah. Been a big Banquet guy, but then if I want to get really shitty and dirty, High Life. But I feel like I can drink like so many High Lifes, and it's just fun sometimes. I go on like a shameless High Life binger every now and then, like once or twice a year.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like obviously Montucky Cold Snacks charging into the mix too.
It is.
I'll throw a few of those down from time to time. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm on the same page. It's cool to see these guys realizing that sessionability in like the most ultimate dad form is needed and providing that for the people.
Is that a word? You just made up a word. Session abilities.
Taking session to the sesh fest.
You might have just made someone's beer name.
We're sessioning.
Session ability.
Early tees for the sesh fest.
Right.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting that some of these larger regional craft breweries are opting to kind of go back to its roots in putting out some of these easy drinking lagers. You're seeing a lot of regional struggle. Earlier this week we just got news that Green Flash put up their Virginia Beach brewery up for sale. Scaling back its distribution earlier in the year from 32 states to really focus and recapitalize. And then Smutty Nose earlier this year also put their brewery up for auction. You're seeing a lot of these larger old guard breweries that are starting to scale back. And you also had Anheuser-Busch laying off 12% of their workforce last September. New Belgium laid off 28 employees in February. So I think with this move to kind of reach out to an easier drinking audience base in terms of like a more traditional audience base, those people who make up a lot of that 90% market share that big beer still owns, and kind of combating and fighting for that market share. Do you feel like that's a way for them to maybe build their opportunities in terms of revenue?
You mean as far as like setbacks go? I mean, or cutbacks?
Yeah, I mean, they're seeing it's becoming a more competitive landscape in the craft market, and so it seems to me that some of these moves to push these premium lagers or lagers that are of equal price point to some of the Banquets and the Bud Heavies might be an opportunity for them to gain market share in an audience base that otherwise
going after new markets for sure, because you have to go one of two ways, and one part of the industry that's succeeding is neighborhood breweries, and that's not slowing down.
Totally.
The more neighborhood breweries, in my opinion, still is the better, for the better. But for breweries at the size of New Belgium, they're not going to start opening up like neighborhood New Belgium. They're going to actually have to go in the next market, and that's the Budweiser market, that's the Coors market, and make these brands that will compete, with those cheaper macro brands. A lot of people don't buy craft beer because they think it's too expensive. They just want to spend top dollar, on a 30 rack. But if they can go and buy a better beer at a similar price point, you're going to start to change some people's minds on craft beer. And that's just my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd like to bring in Steve Kurowski. He loves his share of Kolsch's and Pilsners, I know. Steve, I love your take on this topic. I don't know, did you catch the beginning of what we were talking about?
I came in on the back end of what Hunter was saying, so if you can reintroduce it real quick.
Yeah, basically we were saying, do you see the shift of regional breweries putting out some of these easier drinking craft lagers and easier approachable beers that are not as fancy in terms of ingredients and creative styles, going kind of back to the base? Do you see that as an opportunity to gain some of that market share that previously was so dominated by big beer?
Well, I think that's part of the strategy, but I think it's also just getting back to the basics and making beers that a lot of people want. Not all brewers don't want double IPAs every day, so a lot of these breweries are making beers they want to drink. And so, you know, you look at Ska Brewing and Mexican Lager, how long that's been out. There's been, what Shift from New Belgium was a number of years ago. So this has been an approach for a long time. I think right now it's just getting a little bit extra of attention because I think they're very good. They're getting better all the time. And in the early days of craft beer, a lot of those beers were fairly basic compared to what we have now. Amber lagers and golden ales, stuff like that, that was common in the late 80s and the mid 90s. And so it's kind of just getting back to some of those basics. And we all know volume is what helps a brewery stay in business. Like, if you overturn your tanks and you're making beers that people want to drink two or three of instead of just one 10-ounce serving, you're going to be doing yourself some good. So there's a lot that goes into that strategy, but I think it's mostly because the attention's there because the beers are getting so much better.
Yep.
And those lower ABV and really basic categories, the Pilsners, the Hefeweizens are getting amazing out there, Mexican lagers, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Fantastic. Now, kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum, we still have innovation pushing the way. I want to bring in Hunter. I know I want to hear your take on this. New Belgium just recently announced the release of Hemperer.
I had
HPA.
It. I had it. It's all right. Seriously so fucking weedy.
Is
really?
It?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had it yesterday at Starbar.
Real quick before we get into that, a little background on the Hemperer. Essentially, it's a beer that is brewed with whole hemp flower seeds, I believe. And they also tried to identify hemp terpenes that are found naturally in the plant materials that they could emulate. And so New Belgium created a hoppy beer that emulated the flavor profile of hemp. So Hunter, give me your take.
I'll give you my take. Actually, this is fresh. I had it fresh yesterday at Star Bar. It was awesome. And I have a funny story about it. I actually called Andrew Emberton today at New Belgium, and I was telling him. So I was at Star Bar yesterday, and I rolled in. There was one other person at Star Bar besides me and the manager that was working, and I smelled weed straight up. I was like, but whatever. But I thought it was this like random spirits rep that was at the bar. I was like, he's packing. He wasn't. I sat at the bar, Brandon was finishing up, came over, and I was like, and I asked him, I said, hey, you know, New Belgium was in here yesterday with the Hemperer beer, right, doing samples. He was like, yeah, you want to try it, it's still on tap. He's like, I'm surprised you didn't smell it when you walked in, I just poured some. I was like, no shit.
So
I was like, that was
the
weed. I was like, and I pointed at the stranger, and at the time I was like, I thought that was you. I thought you just had weed on you. I was like, cool, whatever. But it was totally the fact that he had just poured some beer off. Yeah, it was like the beer that was sitting in like the tray underneath the faucets. And I had one. It is bursting with like dank ass, delicious, grade A chronic, man. It smells so good. And it fades away for a little bit, but out of all, like, weed aside, it's actually a very good beer. It's very well done.
Yeah.
I talked to Andrew today, like I said, brand manager for New Belgium. They worked on this for 3 years. They're actually growing their own weed. They've been growing their own marijuana for about a couple years outside of Buena Vista.
That's insane.
Dialing this beer, and it's impressive. I was totally, like, okay with it. I don't like...
Did Hunter just
gimmicky
narc on New Belgium?
I don't know. Or maybe they partnered with somebody who was growing. Did I just narc on New Belgium?
I don't know.
They had shit. No. We're gonna delete that out of this. If that's truly a narc situation. I don't think Andrew would have told me that if they were illegally growing anything. No, they probably had some sort of somebody they were working with. They were getting exclusive hemp from a marijuana grower outside, a legal marijuana grower outside of Buena Vista.
That's what I was going to say. The federal government does not allow it to be brewed with whole hemp flour.
New Belgium is probably one of the most watched breweries by TTB.
Sure.
I don't think they would do anything outside of the books.
Absolutely.
And the beer, like I said, the beer is fantastic. I was impressed.
Well, a little more in the sphere of kind of the weed beer kind of realm. It was announced just yesterday as well that Keith Vila, who for many years was kind of overseeing the Blue Moon project of their Belgian wit. He recently retired, but he announced that he's going to be starting a new brewery that's focused on non-alcoholic beer that uses THC. So, you know, kind of we're seeing that the lines kind of blurring between beer and the weed industry. I have heard that he's also going to be starting a separate brewery that is actually alcoholic beer that doesn't have weed. But the news broke yesterday that they are starting a THC non-alcoholic beer project. What do you think about that?
I think it's fine. I don't really drink. I don't like that much of a crossover. Like, if I'm going to drink a beer, it's because I want to get buzzed or I want to, like, hang out socially. I'm not going to drink a beer to get high. I'm just going to smoke. I'm just going to, like, pass the joint with my friends. I'm not that kind of a person where I'm going to sit around and drink beer all of a sudden and get stoned.
Well,
some
like,
people might be different on that topic.
Sure.
Yeah, and, like, a non-alcoholic weed beer.
Yeah.
Is that not just, like... It just makes me think it's like kombucha weed or something. I don't know if I would call it weed anymore. I mean,
I've
I get it's like
fun weed like colas before. I'm like, that's cool,
right? And like that's a thing.
Taste,
but like,
they taste good.
I guess
like,
you call it beer because
like
it has
I like the
malt
flavor of marijuana. I do. I'm not gonna drink a beer to get stoned.
Right.
No, that's too far. A lot of people, I read all the comments on New Belgium's beer and the Hemperer. People are like, keep it separate. It's funny. It is separate. They just use the hemp aroma in a beer, and it actually does smell great. It's somewhat offensive. If you don't like the smell of marijuana, you're not going to like that beer at all.
I wonder if that'll be a weird thing for getting them,
strong.
Like getting bars to pick up that handle. Like, this is going to make your bar smell like weed.
It's funny. I mean, I'm not going to speak for him.
Well, it's definitely going to do well.
I'm sure it's been
next month.
It's been a topic. It's going to do very well. Yeah.
But yeah, look for Syria is the name of his brewery that's focused on THC, non-alcoholic beer. Interesting move from Keith Vila. You know, for someone who kind of...
Is it Keith? I think it's Keith Vila.
Vila? Is it Vila?
That's what everyone called it when I worked at Coors.
But, you know, for someone who's so traditionally... kind of based in this realm of traditional style, I find it interesting that he's going kind of doing a 180 and doing something so extreme. So pretty cool in that sense. And
I mean, people do weird shit when they're retired, right?
Apparently.
You get bored, you do weird shit.
Absolutely. I want to bring up one thing real quick. A big thank you to First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. They are Denver's Pour Your Own Draft System located in the Rhino Art District. This April is their collaboration beer is going to be done with Four Noses Brewing in Broomfield, and the beer is a Berliner Weiss with lemon, lime, and lactose. Once again, that's brewed with Four Noses as First Draft's April collaboration. Throughout the month, they'll also have Whimsy, Bareback Blonde, About Damn Time IPA, and Experimental Imperial IPA all on tap at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. Located in Denver's Rhino Art District. It's a pour-your-own-draft system, so it's basically like the adult version of a Froyo shop. You can try as much or as little as you want. First Draft Tap in the Kitchen.
Did you say they're doing a collab beer with Four Noses?
Yeah, they are.
Idiots.
All right, jumping back into it real quick. You know, we have... We talked about some extremes, and also we talked about traditional styles, but in the middle ground, we have the rising class of small breweries. Last time we talked a little bit about Powder Keg Brewing closing, and then just recently we did an interview with Amalgam talking about their new kind of shared space concept with Westbound and Down. So Amalgam Brewing, the brainchild of Phil Joyce and Eric Schmidt, they are opening up a Denver location, and the building is going to be shared with Westbound and Down, who's going to be doing some barrel aging
in that space. So, you know, this is a different approach in terms of business model. You have two small breweries that are going to be sharing space, sharing resources a little bit, but completely different operations. What do you think about their approach in trying something completely different?
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. I think it's fun. It's different. I don't think it's, you know, they're trying to, like, reinvent the wheel. I think it makes sense. I think it kind of flows nicely together, especially if everyone's kind of on the same page. And when I say same page, like, as far as just friendly. I think it's a cool concept. It's something new, but I don't think it's so crazy that they're, like, in danger of doing something that people aren't going to want to experience. I think it's great.
Yeah, I mean, brewing equipment is expensive, right? Like, and we want independent breweries, right? And we want everybody to have a shot at that and not just feel like they have to raise capital or get some big friend to pour in a bunch of money or sell out to somebody or whatever. So I think it's cool, man. Like, everybody's making cool beer. It really harkens back to what we were talking about earlier. Collaboration is key. Keep everybody working together. Everybody wins when everybody works together.
Absolutely. Now, the big debate of this episode that I want to bring up, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice, was recently on Stephen Colbert's late night show, and they had her weigh in on something completely different from the beer industry. Do you consider a hot dog to be a sandwich?
This is such a trick question.
You have to keep this long moment of silence in the end.
Yes, no.
For dramatic effect. Yeah.
Well, Sammy in Atlanta, who occasionally hangs out sometimes, she'll
have rare cameos
on a hard no. Hard no.
And Hunter, what is your take?
Oh, so are you. No.
You don't think so?
No.
Keenan?
I want to say no, but part of me thinks that a hot dog is just one of the most famous kinds of sandwiches, that it's like transcended sandwich terminology.
Wow. Yeah, Keenan's smarter than me.
Drowski, what do you think? Is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Right? But did you hear Keenan's logic? Did you hear Keenan's logic?
Yes. But
it's a piece of meat in between two slices of bread, so...
It's in a bun and not two slices of bread. But two slices of bread are not connected.
Right, but Bader Ginsburg argued that a submarine sandwich is still a sandwich, even though that is often a partially sliced hoagie with meat shoved in it.
I've also had sausage, like linked, like sausage sandwiches that are just a sausage, like a hot dog, sliced in half in between two pieces of bread.
I mean... You know, to be honest, my heart wants to say no, that a hot dog is not a sandwich. But my brain wants to say yes.
There's certainly some logic.
So I got a question, another follow-up question. Do you consider a taco a sandwich?
See, and that's where I'm like, absolutely not. Like, I was thinking about that too. Like, quesadilla almost is even more sandwich-like, but I'm like, no, like, certainly not. But again, I don't know. You could probably make an argument for it.
Because then you could make the distinction that pizzas are just open-faced sandwiches.
Totally. I mean, it's all the same type of ingredients.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much concludes this episode 50 of the Porchcast. Unfortunately, Sam and Sammy could not join us. Apparently, they're off in Juice Land to haze it up. But I wanted to thank Keenan Stoner once again for two parts for joining us to give us the dish on Collaboration Fest. Once again, taking place... tomorrow, Saturday, what date is that?
The 31st.
31st, wow, the end of March, at the Denver Hyatt Regency in downtown Denver. Tickets are still available at collaborationfest.com, so be sure to grab yours. This is one of the best festivals in the country. It really does speak to the true collaborative nature of this industry. And plus, you get to try a bunch of beers that will probably never be brewed again. These are specialty beers brewed specifically for this festival, bringing together breweries from around the country and around the globe. As we talked a little bit about this before, you know, you've got Peking Duck beer, you've got Clamor's Chalk beer, you've got all sorts of hazy IPAs. Ratio and Ska did a Norwegian white IPA. You've got pastry stouts. Everything under the bus in terms of traditional styles, and also a lot of innovative styles as well. Keenan, anything else to add?
Yeah, I think you just nailed it. It's some of the wildest beer you'll ever have, but there's also, don't be too scared, there's also pilsners, there's lagers, there's stuff to kind of, you know, tame it all down in the mix too, so you can try. There is a craft malt liquor coming down the pipeline that you'll be able to try on Saturday, so don't miss it, man.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Keenan. It's always great talking to you. We'll see Saturday at Collaboration Fest.
Sounds good.
Hunter?
Shout out to the homie Dustin Ramey at Four Noses. The little devilish bastard. How much he pay you to get on the cover of the fifth annual Collaboration Beer Fest
program?
$0.
$0,
just a big honking smile.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he is handsome.
Hunter, thanks again. Hopefully we'll have the Sam and Sammy team join us for the next episode. This has been episode 50 of the Porchcast.
Check you later.
Like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow the Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @porchdrinkingco.